We'll bring the Environment Natural Resources Policy Committee to order. Representative Lindgren, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
Yes, I have, sir.
Representative Lindgren moves the minutes from Thursday, February 19th, 2004. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails and minutes are adopted. Well, members, we've dedicated the entire meeting today to House File 1166. It's my bill, and it's the constitutionally dedicated sales tax, 1/4 of 1% to game and fish and parks and trails and zoos and clean water, impaired waters issue. I will make a motion to move House File 1166 to bring it before us. That be recommended to pass, and we're going to refer that to Government Operations and Veterans Affairs Policy Committee. And then with that, to bring the bill into the order that I'd like, I would move the DE1 amendment. And I believe we have some changes to the amendment, actually. On page 8, line 4, Mr. Hillen, would you like to explain the amendment exactly the way we want it to read?
Sure, Mr. Chair, members. It's just an error of omission. Instead of water protection account, it should read clean water fund, which is the fund that's set up elsewhere in the bill. Page 8, line 4.
Instead of water protection account, it should read clean water fund. All in favor of that amendment to the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion prevails. Okay. Then we need to make a motion. I will make a motion to adopt the DE1 delete all amendment to House File 1166. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevail. Amendment is adopted. As amended. Okay, members, we'll go through the bill. I'm sure everyone is pretty familiar with the issue. What we just did in this amendment, the original bill was a 1/4 of 1% tax increase that we would allow the voters to vote on in order to pay for these issues. And in the amendment, we're taking the money from existing sales tax revenue, 1/4 of 1%. And it's a 20-year provision. After 20 years, after 2025, the amendment would have to be submitted to the voters again if we want to continue this, but it does expire in 2025. A couple of things that it does: we dedicate 38% of the total annual to improve and enhance and protect fish, wildlife, and habitat, 27% of the total for parks, trails, and zoos, and 35% of the total revenue that would be set aside for this to protection of the waters. And that's Article 1. And it also includes the constitutional amendment that would be submitted to the voters. Article 2 sets up the funds. Also creates some public officials, some councils and things that we can deal with in GovOps. But sets up the funds, the Parks and Trails Fund, the Heritage Enhancement Fund, and the Clean Water Fund. I should tell you that we also put in here, from the Heritage Enhancement Fund, we dedicate 25% of that 38% to a walk-on program for hunters and fishermen. And that's a little bit different from what the Senate bill has. The Senate bill doesn't have that, and I need to talk to Senator Sams about that. I think that he would find that that's probably a good idea. And also, the Clean Water Council is created in this bill, where the Senate bill does not have that in the bill. So those are the differences from the Senate bill. I can answer any questions that you might have. We have a number of people that would like to testify on the bill, but we'll take questions at this time. Representative Wiginia?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, how are we going to be explaining to people where the money is actually coming from. I mean, what? How are we going to? This is general fund money, as I understand it.
That's correct.
And if it's general fund money, and people know that there is no more money in the general fund, they're going to be asking us, well, who is not going to be getting the money that they have been getting, and how do we answer that?
Well, Representative Wagenius, as you know, the when this becomes effective, if the voters vote on it and approve it, they're saying that they want this to happen, if the voters approve this. And we're in the next budget cycle. We have to deal with the budget next year in 2005, and we're going to have to accommodate this if the voters approve it. So if the voters are saying they want this done, we'll have to adjust the budget to make it work. Representative Wagenius.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we know, I mean, I understand that, and mm-hmm. I think honesty to voters is an extraordinarily important thing we do, and I think most voters don't understand that we are anticipating a shortfall in the next budget, too, and a fairly major one in the next budget. So how do we tell, what do we tell voters about where the money is coming from when we do this? I mean, is it coming from the governor's office? Is it coming from, what are we going to change in state government to provide for this?
Well, Representative Wagenius, we're going to have to look at the entire, if this is approved, we'll have to look at the entire budget to make it work. And each individual department of government is going to have to compensate to make this happen if the voters approve it. If this is what the voters want, we're going to have to make it work. I'm sure the governor will know that when he puts his recommendations together, his budget proposal for the next biennium, he will accommodate for this. And might have to take it from each and every individual department of government. If the governor doesn't want to take anything from education, for example, maybe he'll leave that alone, but it'll have to come from some other areas. That's going to be left up to the entire legislature. It's going to be left up to the governor should the voters approve this. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. Will this amendment be going to Environment Finance for those discussions?
Representative Wagenius, it has to make a number of different stops. It's going to go to Government Operations first, and then I believe it does go to the Finance Committee and probably Ways and Means. Maybe taxes. Representative Wassler.
Mr. Chairman, I'm looking at the background information on the delete all amendment or the bill. And I'm curious, how much money are we talking about?
1/4 of 1% is approximately in the neighborhood of $170 million.
I also had, Mr. Chairman, if I could, I had a question on the establishment of the Waters Council.
Mm-hmm. This is language, Representative Wasluck, that the Impaired Waters Group put together. When they presented their plan, this came from that. Senator Sams does not have that in his bill, but I talked to a number of people. They thought it was very important that we put the council in place if we're going to set up this fund.
So if I could, it would be focused on impaired waters, because I don't want to create a duplication.
Focused on impaired waters.
Okay.
Yeah. Any other questions from the committee before we bring up testimony? Okay. Senator Lessard in the audience? I know Senator Lessard has worked on this long and hard, and he was going to be here to testify. I don't see Senator Lessard. Lance Ness. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Ness. You'll have to state your name and who you represent for the record. And members, we're going to take questions of each, vary a little bit from what we normally do. Normally we bring up all the testifiers, we'll ask questions later. But what I'm asking of the people that are going to be testifying, please keep your comments short, allow some time for some questions so we can get through everybody that wants to testify. Mr. Ness.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Lance Ness. I'm the president of the Fish and Wildlife Legislative Alliance. It's an umbrella group of many of the state's hunting and fishing organizations. Before you today, you have what I would call just historic legislation. I would first of all like to thank the chairman, Mr. Hackbarth, for coming through with this legislation. It's very, very important. and to, again, to compliment him on adding the waters portion in the Heritage Council. Again, from discussions I've had out and amongst that, that's an important aspect of this. Just a little quick review. This has been around for about 8 years now. We've been discussing this. Several attempts have been made to bring this forward. And this is modeled after a plan that's in Missouri where they've taken 1/8 of their taxes and increased it. And it's been a model across the country of natural resources and conservation. And so that's basically what it's been modeled after. Of course, we've modeled it for our own state here. It does bring, we want to talk a little bit, I'm just going to mention real briefly, I've been handing this out to many legislators, the importance of economic hunting in Minnesota. It's a whole report in America. Minnesota's, again, economic benefits here are reaching $2.3 billion of hunting and fishing. That's hunting and fishing alone, not including bird watching and other aspects. So, again, this all ties around a huge economic benefit that can be gained here, too. And when we talk about this, I hear the discussion of how much this is going to cost, a small ratio. Basically, it comes out to be 25 cents out of every $100 of tax. That's what this breaks down to. And to many of us, that seems a small portion to pay for clean water, for parks and trails and zoos, and for the ability to hunt and fish in our state and maintain those for future generations. And I would just want to keep this again short. I told the chairman I'd keep it to 2 minutes, so I'll try. But again, who does this benefit? Who are we doing this for? And who we're doing it for is for future generations. It's for your children, it's your grandchildren, it's for the children that follow them. We have the ability, a unique time, in the beginning of a new century, to protect our natural resources, to enhance our parks and our trails and our zoos for future generations. That's who it's going to help. It isn't for anyone else in this room. It's for the future. And you have the chance, the opportunity to do something. If I could, Mr. Chairman, just for a moment. When you go home tonight, you could take the opportunity to look into a child's eyes and tell them that you sat in a meeting today and talked about taking 25 cents out of every $100 for the future of our state, for our future, our natural resources. And I'll tell you what, that child would probably say, and you're going to support this, right? And it's for them. I'll conclude my testimony, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions, Mr. Ness? Representative Wiginius.
Yes, thank you. We've been sitting here looking at the dollars involved in the clean water portion, and that's $59 million. Yet, that's only a portion of what is needed in that account. How do we... I'm worried that if we put this out the way it is, people will think that solves our clean water problem, and it doesn't even, it only glances at it, but it doesn't solve it. And I worry about something like this being so misleading that people will think they've solved the problem.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wiginius, again, this is a start, Representative. Right now, there is no money for impaired waters. We have to start somewhere. We have to make an effort to do something. This is our attempt to at least get the ball rolling, to get some start action on and cleaning up our waters and our rivers and our lakes. I realize it is not enough, that it could take millions and millions, but this is a start. We have to start somewhere. We can't be the answer for everything, but we have to make a start. And this is our attempt to make a start at cleaning up our waters and our lakes.
And Representative Wiginius, I believe, and somebody can correct me if I'm wrong, and maybe Representative Osmond might know, but I thought in the impaired waters plan, that was a 10-year plan, and this is a 20-year plan. It gives more money over the long run. And also, in Senator Sam's bill, he dedicated 30% of the money to impaired waters, which is $51 million. We took some money, actually, from the Heritage Enhancement Fund and from the Parks and Trails Fund to move additional money into clean water, because we thought more money had to be there to get this off the ground. Representative Wiginius.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's one of the reasons we need to go environment finance. We need between $600 million and $3 billion just for those things that have been identified thus far as impaired waters. Yet it looks like we are going to be the land of 10,000 impaired waters,
well, polluted waters. Yes, we don't have to address all of that in 1 year.
No, we don't. But this will not. It will only begin to address a small portion of it. And I think what we're missing here is the context of what it will take to deal with our impaired waters. So I think we need some testimony on exactly the scope of the clean water or the waters problem and what portion this actually takes care of. Because when we're talking to people, I never want them to be misled to think that this will take care of the problem. If we're going to say this will take care of 10% of the problem, then we're being honest with them. But if we give them the impression that it's more than that, I think that's not right.
Didn't we have a committee hearing to look at that clean water plan?
Yes, we did.
Impaired waters plan?
We did, Mr. Chair, but it's clear that we all don't have an idea of what $59 million will do toward the clean waters problem. I mean, that if I look at this, it's not a 10-year issue. We have a multiple-decade issue to deal with, we have the sewage treatment plant issue is $1.5 billion, and we had testimony in joint committee that it was going to cost us $250 million a year just to stay even. So because we're so far behind on that thing that keeps our waters dirty. So we haven't made the list out, and that's what I'm encouraging us to do in environment finance, the list of all of the things we need to do to clean up our waters, and then we can see what percentage this is, so we can just tell people, well, this will be what percentage of the need. That's all I'm saying.
Well, Representative Wagenius, I want to make it very, very clear that we don't have any dedicated money towards clean water or impaired waters. This gives it close to $60 million a year, dedicated money. And in the bill, the money dedicated under the section shall be appropriated by law and shall not be used as a substitute for other traditional funding sources. And this doesn't say that we can't put more money into an impaired waters program, but this is $60 million annually dedicated. I would say that's a great step forward in solving the problem.
I think that's a misleading statement to the public.
Mr. Chair? Representative Cornish.
Representative Wagenius, first of all, you said that the voters wouldn't understand that there's a budget shortfall, and then you said the voters would be misled. I don't know about your voters, but mine are pretty bright in southern Minnesota, and they've been very aware. I think even the students in the chairs here know that there's a budget shortfall and to what extent, and I don't think they're going to be misled. I don't think anybody has any idea that this is going to be enough to solve the problem. It just goes a long way. Every year we give money into budget for education or transportation. Transportation, we're not nearly going to solve the problem, but we take a chunk out of it every time we can. I think this goes a long way, and I'm surprised about your hesitancy because you spend a lot of time in committee really getting all over these issues. You should be jumping all over this like stink on a skunk. I think, in the vernacular, because it's your issue. You're our environmental awareness person here on this committee, and you speak about this way more than you do education or any other subject, I think, in your area. You're known for being an environmentalist. And finally, we get one piece of legislation that's going to go so far there. I'm just surprised at your hesitancy. And I think it's a mistake to open up every single account. When this bill progresses, we're not going to have time to get into impaired waters and all the other little segments this could go into. That's why we've had these other committee hearings, so we know how we stand in each one of those accounts. So we're going to get bogged down to never, never land if we open up every one and start getting a sheet out on it, I think. So.
Representative Wagenius.
I appreciate the compliment, Representative Cornish. My problem is that I was around when we did the lottery and dedicated a portion to the environment, and that was going to solve our problems forever. And what I saw happen is money slowly drain away from the folks who protected our waters, slowly drain away from PCA, drain away from DNR. So now we're saying we want to go back and fix that problem. Now, I am you're right. I want to fix that problem, but I want the public to know exactly the meaning in what they're voting on. And I think this committee first has to understand what the meaning is. I mean, what portion of the Clean Waters action, Clean Waters problem does this solve? I don't know the answer to that. That is something this committee should wrestle with, so we can say to the public, well, this solves 15% of the problem or 40% of the problem, but we shouldn't give the public the impression that it solves a problem it doesn't solve. That's not fair to the public.
Mr. Chairman, just a short answer. I guess I have no problem justifying this to my voters. I go home and I get the phone book, call down the elevator and arrange a coffee talk meeting, go down there and say, hey, we got something coming down the pipe that might be of interest to you, and ask them what they think about it. And that's what I do all over my district. And I think my voters appreciate something being put on the ballot of this magnitude that they can make up the decision. We're not giving the yes or no. All we're doing is making this decision available. If somebody wants to do the same thing for education or transportation, that's power be to them. But this is the environment, this is today, and this is what we're forwarding through now. So,
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And begging the committee's pardon for my being late, if I am asking a question that was answered before I got here. Representative Wagenius, I've had concerns with this in the past, and I'm looking to see exactly what form this is in now. And I struggle with what this represents when the public votes on it as well, because of the concern of really not getting an increase when we're all done for the environment. And the only way I know we could really have an increase is if we end up with a hole in the budget by needing to backfill the shifted revenues or the dedicated revenues. My question to you, Representative Wagenius, is what do you think this means? Your concern that I hear, which I want to be sensitive to, is what the public's going to think. I'd like to know what you think this really represents, and whether or not we're going to have an increase for environment or not.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you. Thank you for the question, Representative Olson. It seems to me that we have to, as a committee, add up what is missing. We don't monitor our groundwater anymore. PCA doesn't monitor our groundwater. That's our drinking water. Ag does a tiny bit of monitoring, but it doesn't amount to much, unfortunately. We're not monitoring our streams and lakes. We do about $1 million a year. The total cost is probably between $8 and $9 additional million dollars a year. And then we have the cleanup issue, and that is just for those impaired waters that have been identified. The cost of that is between $600 million and $3 billion. But the projection is that between now and 2014, we will be the land of 10,000 impaired waters. So we haven't even included the cost of that cleanup. So we're adding up. So we need to add up all of these figures of what we do. When we talk about impaired waters, I do not believe we're also talking about what it costs to do the wastewater treatment systems in Minnesota. And that is a big bill. And what counties and cities have requested of us is $1.5 billion. We can leverage some of that money, but it's been established that the federal government isn't going to have as much for us to leverage. We can't put it all on local units of government. The shortfall looks like it's about $250 million a year. So I'm just trying to add up the numbers and figure out what size of a question we're dealing with. And we don't have that on the table. This, it could be a portion. I don't have the math because I'm not that quick at math, though I can go back and do it. But I am telling you the things I think we need to add up and say, this takes care of that portion.
Okay, Representative Olson, we've got a lot of people that want to testify on the bill, too. So,
I'm sorry.
Representative Olson.
All right, very quickly, just Representative Wagenius, maybe we can take this up later. I understand and admire your desire to really count the cost of all of this, I'm just trying to determine whether or not we truly end up with an increase going to the environment. And that's really not clear to me. Because it can be backfilled by other means and just end up shifting things around and really not end up with an increase.
Mr. Ness?
Mr. Chairman, just to see if I can help conclude this a little bit. There will be 52 million under this particular bill for clean water. You add that up, that's $100 million every 2 years. In 20 years, that's quite a bit of money. It has to be a start. We have to start somewhere. It will add up eventually. We will make a difference, but we have to have a start. I will end my comments, and I have my good friend, Senator Bob Lessard, former senator, with me today, too. And I'd like to turn the rest of my time over to him, Mr. Chairman, if there are no further questions of me.
Mr. Ness, too, we should let you know that we changed it a little bit from, and I made the statement earlier, maybe I missed it, we went from 30% to 35% for the impaired waters program, so it's actually up close to $60 million that we're putting into the impaired waters.
Probably still using my previous numbers there, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for your testimony.
And just again, we are in support of the bill.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Members, today with us we have ninth grade students from the New Prague High School, and students, today we're talking about dedicating a certain portion, 1/4 of 1% of the sales tax receipts that we receive in the state of Minnesota, and dedicating that to hunting and fishing habitat and wildlife and zoos, parks, trails, and our impaired waters. And that's the bill we're discussing today. But members, please welcome the ninth grade students from New Prague High School. Okay, we're going to continue with the bill, and we have former Senator Bob Lessard with us today, and I would like to state that the Heritage Enhancement Fund, the Parks and Trails portion, this was actually brought to us and started working on this from Senator Bob Lessard, and he's put this package together many years ago, and he's been working on it a very long time. The clean water portion of this, the impaired waters portion, is Representative Osmond's idea. Representative Osmond's, if he's coming back, okay. This was Representative Osmond's concept of putting that in this bill, and I think it was a good idea, and it's actually going to help move the bill forward. So that's Representative Osmond's concept, and the rest of it is actually something that was brought to us by Senator Bob Lessard. Senator Lessard, would you like to give us your comments on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't very often get over here. We have kind of a courtesy, don't we? That one, but now I'm not in there anymore, so now I'm open game. I want to point out.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. This is the third time around on this bill. Some of you were here, remember the constitutional right to hunt and fish. That took us two and a half sessions, so we're right on target. That's about how long it takes to pass, I think, through this body a piece of legislation that's as significant as this one. And as I'd like to say that, as important as that was to me personally, that last bill, Constitutional Right to Hunt and Fish, this is almost dwarfs that in what we can do for long-term funding for not only hunting and fishing, but for our environment for waters. Minnesota is the largest landowner in the continental United States. A lot of people don't realize that. We own more state-owned land than any other state in the Union. And we're not, you can take out Texas and all those states, but even if you go to Wisconsin, and I hunt there every year, look at all the posted land. So while it's a great asset, there's nothing like it in the country, we're also more creatures of the legislative process, like you would be in Texas or some of those other states, because we have so much state-owned land. And the legislature has so much input into what's going to happen to that state-owned land. And I became convinced a long, long time ago, if we were going to leave something for the future generations. And by the way, this isn't just for hunting and fishing. When this started out, it was, believe me, it was a kind of an idea that I have to give the credit to the state of Missouri, who came up with this particular concept. And I just really feel very strongly, if this legislature would pass this bill, there would be nothing most significant piece of legislation in the country of this type. I already had a call from another state about 3 days ago that I don't know how they got wind of this bill, but they want me to send a copy of the bill. And I said, well, you better wait to see what the final bill looks like before I can send you. But I did send them a copy of the bill I had at that time. I know, in response to Representative Virginia's statement about what will the public know what's in the bill, I can categorically guarantee you the public will know what this bill. When it goes to the people, we will have an apparatus in place that certainly the sportsmen and women, and on top of that, I think the parks people, the state parks, working with the local parks and all the other entities in this bill, will get our message out. I know it will get out, and they will know what's on the ballot. And I'm convinced if they have the opportunity to vote on this, they will. Because if we don't leave something for the, it isn't for the people in this room, you know, it's for the future generations, for those kids, they're not kids anymore, but their kids and their kids and their kids. And that's what this is all about. So I think, I think if we don't pass it, we'll be doing an injustice, and I don't think it'll ever again have the opportunity to pass this bill that we do here today. I think the stars are lined up. And I know that when we had this meeting, when we called this last press conference, and I started calling everything from Galhens to sports figures, to the sportsmen's groups, to get, I never had one person turn me down, both from that I called, and that's when I knew that this thing had a life of its own. Remember, this is my third year around with this particular bill. The only regret I'll have, I won't be around to be able to vote on it if it does in fact pass. So that's about the end of my comments, and I know that I'm kind of worn out trying to pass this bill. So that's, but I think it's just a great piece of legislation.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius, question?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't want to dwell on this, but since Senator Lessard put words into my mouth, I've got to take them out and say what I intended, because I think you didn't hear what I said. Of course, people will know that the amendment is on the ballot, but the impression that will be given to people will be that this is a problem solver, when indeed we don't know that because we haven't had the hearings on what the context is. I know I'll hear again and again, this is a start, but we also have to tell the citizens, what's the end game? What is the solution to our water's problems? We're going to become the land of 10,000 impaired waters. And I don't want people to be misled into thinking that this bill solves the problem if it does not. And that's what I'm worried about. Not whether people will know the amendment is on the ballot, but whether they are misled. And that's a problem.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Lessard.
And certainly I'm not an elected official anymore, but and I agree with you. This is just a part of the problem. But I would think, you know, I chaired the Environment National Resource Committee in the Senate longer than any other senator has ever chaired. I was the longest-serving chairman. Not once when we were doing our targets, when we got our targets down from the leadership, we never, ever, ever did we get enough for waters. I mean, it was always, when we get our targets, we always got was the bottom of the barrel. So certainly, this is just a start for our waters. I don't think anybody that I've ever talked to trying to get the idea that this is the answer to all the problems, but it certainly is a very big start. And then the legislative process can prevail after that when they do, you do your budget to the general revenue fund, then they can do that as an addendum to this. But this, to me, at least, I would think that you would like to think that this is one big, giant step in the right direction. But no, it's not going to be the answer to do what has to be done. I totally agree with that.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. And here's the problem. As somebody who did chair the Natural Resources Committee, the first thing that will be thrown back into Representative Osmond's face will be, you already got your dedicated fund. You need nothing more. And therein is the problem here, because we have not even defined the problem yet that we're trying to solve, not only just in waters, but what does it cost in park? What do we need to do for parks and trails? What do we need to do for wildlife habitat? We haven't defined the problem, and until you do that, we should not say this is the solution. I want us in committee to say this is what we're going to need over the next 25 years for fish and wildlife. This is what we're going to need for parks and trails. This is what we're going to need for waters. Then we can say what this means. We're not there yet. I mean, it's fun to get up and say, yeah, this is a good start, but there's no end game. We have no idea what this thing means.
Madam Chair?
Well, Senator Lessard.
All I would say when I was sitting in your position, and when and there was opposition to a piece of legislation, there's an alternative, and that is to vote against the bill. And that's what the legislative process is designed to do. I suspect very strongly if it does get to the floor of the Senate, it gets to the floor of the House, and it goes to the conference committee, the votes will be there. But and certainly then, that's the legislative process, vote against the bill. But I just think that this thing is has got so much support throughout the state that I think that hopefully logic will prevail. But I guess that's the only way that I can answer the question.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I can point to something in the bill to raise my question again, and maybe others can try to answer it as we go forward. I'd really like to know that this does meet your intentions in authoring this and making certain that it does represent an increase. If you look on bottom of page one, and Mr. Lessard, you having a lot of experience around these halls and all of us recognizing we cannot bind future legislatures unless we use the Constitution, albeit this language I think is very important for that purpose. In the bottom of page one, the money dedicated under this section shall be appropriated by law and shall not be used as a substitute for traditional funding sources. My concern, and it goes on, for purposes specified that the dedicated money shall supplement traditional funding sources of funding for those purposes. My concern is that current funding sources involve some sales tax money whenever we use general fund dollars. And my question is, and I just like to get this on the record so we know intent at least, I just wonder if this language really does it. My question is if we have a $700 million environmental budget currently, let's just use that number, and this increases the revenues $170 million, does that then mean if voters approve this, we will automatically have a $870 million budget?
I don't believe that that's true.
What then does it mean, Mr. Chair? Could we still have a $700 million budget under this language?
We could still have a 700. It could increase $170 million. They might decrease other areas that this bill doesn't cover, maybe to cover the $170 million. But the way I read this is that they can't take it from those areas.
Okay.
But they may take it from other areas within our budget.
So, Mr. Chair,
and I should add too, I believe, and maybe Mr. Helen can correct me, but I think this is the same kind of language that they had when they created the LCMR. Is
it? Well, not the LCMR, Mr.
Not
Chair,
the
but the Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund language.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. So, and begging your pardon, Mr. Chair, so what this really is then is a dedication for these purposes more so than a dedication of increased revenue.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. That's a little different than what the issue has been in the past, for me anyway.
Senator Lessard, any other comments?
You know, am I done?
Representative Otto has a question for you, I think.
Mine is really short and sweet. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know if you'll know this or not, Senator Lessard. On Subdivision 3 of Section, I think it's 4, about the Clean Waters Council membership and appointment, it says a Clean Waters Council of 17 members is created on November 15th of 04. I'm just wondering where that council comes from, who picks those people. I noticed there's some further on down it talks about commissioners, different commissioners appointing certain people. But I was just curious if you know the technical part of that.
Mr. Chair, I think that probably should come from the guru that thought that they come up with this, and that's
right.
Probably the chairman.
Yeah, and
I can't answer that.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Senator Lessard. Thank you very much. This was not part of Senator Lessard's original bill. This was taken from the impaired waters, and that date might have to be changed. We're going to be taking this to government operations next to address the councils that are in here specifically, and we'll try to clean up all that language when we get to government operations. But any other questions, comments? We'll bring up some of the other Representative Nelson.
I guess I have some concerns about this. I'm all for the idea of putting more money into the environment, but the dedicating process of the money, you know, taking it out of the sales tax. We just went through a big budget balancing session last time, and if this money's set aside, that means more money is going to come out of other areas. I mean, there was testimony here, so look into the eyes of your children and look into the eyes of your grandchildren or the students back here. And how are we going to look in their eyes and tell them, well, we got this money dedicated to for hunting and fishing and game and wildlife, but we're going to have to cut more money out of your school funds, and we're going to have to cut more money out of your health care and all those other issues that come out of the general fund along with this that compete with the general fund money. And I guess that's the concern I have with this bill, with the dedicating part of it. It's going to tie future legislatures and their ability to solve those budget problems that are going to come before us again and again.
Okay. Next person to testify, Mr. John Shores, Minnesota Outdoor Heritage Association, or Alliance. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is John Shores. I'm with the Minnesota Outdoor Heritage Alliance, and I'm very happy to have the opportunity to speak to you and the committee. Minnesota Outdoor Heritage Alliance represents as an umbrella group of many of our hunting and fishing organizations in the state. And you'll recall in 1998 we were instrumental in helping Bob Lessard getting the Right to Hunt and Fish Amendment passed. At that time, that was an issue very important to the sportsmen of the state. This is an issue, the dedication of sales tax for natural resources, that is also important to our hunters, our fishermen, and goes beyond. This is an issue that I think translates across the board. Just the addition of the waters portion to the bill, I think, translates into a partnership of hunters and fishermen and people concerned, just people that don't know how to fish but are concerned with waters. Water is the common theme. Being a waterfowler, one of my favorite pastimes, water is of utmost importance to me. Whatever we can do on the impaired water side, it will be a plus on the wildlife side, and vice versa. And I think you're seeing a reaching out from the outdoor groups to the more environmental groups, saying this is a good thing. You're getting a coming together, a consensus. I have total confidence that people in the state would support this idea. Yes, it is for the future. Yes, it's for priming the pump, the natural resource infrastructure pump, repriming it from the economic side of things, where we're drawing from a resource. We feel there's very little going back in. We need to keep clean soil and clean water. We need to reprime that pump. It means jobs. It means opportunity. It's economic. Clean water is important to me. I was going to make a comment on these new Prague kits that were in here. I'm from Shakopee. If we got clean water in New Prague area, that means they're not going to probably skate so much. They got a heck of a hockey program down there. If we can get them off the ice rinks and back on the lake fishing or something, Shakopee will probably beat them in the next hockey go-around. This is for us all. Moha has supported this concept from the get-go and will continue to do so. With that, I end my comments and we'll entertain questions.
Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Short? Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Judy Erickson, Minnesota Parks and Trails Council. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Judy Erickson, and I represent the Parks and Trails Council of Minnesota. And I'm just here to add our voice of support to this legislation. We have consistently supported efforts to secure dedicated funding for state parks and trails, and we appreciate Representative Hackbarth in bringing this forward again this year. You know, our state parks and trails, parks throughout the state, not just state parks and trails, we've been on this slippery slope of budget reduction. And they impact our quality of life, our tourism economy, and this legislation does offer us the opportunity to turn the trend around. When DNR has to make general fund budget cuts, state parks and metro parks always take a fairly large hit because they are so heavily dependent on the general fund within as a large general fund item within the DNR. I would just like to add that, you know, the proposal that you have before you does reflect the work of the LCMR Park Study Group that was done last summer and adopted by the LCMR. And one of the main findings, and they did just a great job in looking at our parks and trails across all levels of Minnesota, and they found that state parks, metro parks, and regional parks in greater Minnesota are each elements of a comprehensive and complementary statewide park system. They all fit together. Each system has a different mission, different goals, and different clienteles, but each system is based in varying degrees on similar public benefits. These include preserving natural resources, protecting open space, protecting cultural and historical resources, physical fitness opportunities, as well as providing recreational opportunities and interpretive services. It is important that you understand that these systems are complementary and that there are needs within each of them. In working with the DNR and looking at their grant programs, the Scenic and Natural Area Outdoor Recreation Grants, the non-metro regional grant programs, and the trail programs, there are needs of over $20 million in those areas alone. And so this legislation provides some funds towards meeting those needs. And those are grants that would go to cities and counties that within the metro area and in greater Minnesota. So it's a nice piece to the puzzle here. But I would just also want to mention, too, that this helps the health of our citizens. A lot of you guys have heard me talk about this year a little bit, but, you know, for the first time, we have national and state studies that show that there are benefits to our long-term health care costs by providing opportunities for physical fitness for our citizens, and that the cost of physical inactivity has been identified by the Minnesota Department of Health as being $500 million each year. And so as we look at this legislation, as it provides opportunities for hunting and fishing, going to parks and trails, it provides opportunities for physical activity for our citizens, and that's a good thing. So I appreciate the time this morning, Mr. Chair, and would be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Ms. Erickson? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Moving right along. Mark Knight, MCEA. Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Mark Tenike. I'm the Advocacy Director for the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, MCEA, and we're here today to support this bill. I really want to make 3 points. I think this funding is very necessary for the future of hunting, fishing, wildlife, clean water, and outdoor recreation in Minnesota. I think just saying these words kind of sums up a lot of what Minnesota has always been about. But today, I think lack of secure, long-term, sizable funding package really has gotten us to a point, unfortunately, where we need to do more than just protect what we've got. We need to get back some of what we've lost. Second point, both the heritage account and the clean water account, which are two areas that our organization has worked in are, as previous people testifying have noted, the result of collaborative efforts. So a lot of work on both sides, both the wildlife side and the clean water side, has gone into this. And there is general support from what are always referred to as the stakeholders. And I think that's important. And there is a good overlap between the clean water and the wildlife habitat group. Having said that, we've probably worked more on clean water, and there have been some questions about that earlier today. And I know that you heard testimony, I believe, last week on the results of the stakeholder group that the Minnesota Environmental Initiative put together. So the policy side of this, the work to be done to clean up and protect our water in Minnesota, is the result of thinking of really quite a broad group of organizations, including the Department of Agriculture, the Minnesota Association of Watershed Districts, the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts, Minnesota Power, the League of Minnesota Cities, the DNR, the Minnesota Environmental Science and Economic Review Board, the Farmers Union, the Farm Bureau, Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, MCEA, the Minnesota Rivers Council and the Lakes Association, the Pollution Control Agency, the Association of Minnesota Counties, Board of Water and Soil Resources, and Clean Water Action. Now, that's not to say that each of these groups supports the funding package that's before you today, but on the policy side, the work that needs to be done, these groups did reach agreement. And the estimate that was identified for funding need, the funding need was, and this was really sort of a ballpark figure, but the number that was identified was between $75 and $100 million a year. So if doing the math, I think we get to about $60 million a year with Representative Hackbar's bill. So it does take us a fair ways toward the estimate that the group put together. Finally, I think the other point I wanted to make was I think, and you heard a little bit about this in the previous testimony, is that this is not just about environment and natural resources. This is really about having a strong economy in the state of Minnesota. We don't currently, at least, have warm winters and swaying palm trees. We need this outdoor heritage to attract businesses, to attract people who want to work for businesses. And I think we're seeing this more and more. It's time to invest in our clean water, in our parks and trails, and in our wildlife in order to ensure that people continue to want to live in Minnesota and do business here. Just a couple of specific points from MCEA's perspective. Our work in the wildlife area has probably been more regulatory than it has been involved with land purchases. We've worked on wetland issues, we've worked on forestry issues, and we've worked on flood damage reduction, particularly in the Red River Valley. But the funding piece needs to be there to complement the regulatory side of what we do in Minnesota. Without the funding piece, the regulations don't work nearly as well. On the clean water side, one point, and the question was raised about the council. The council is, at least as I understand it, intended to be kind of an outgrowth of the stakeholder group that put together the recommendation. They adopted the name the G16, so there are 16 of them, and the Metropolitan Council may be added, but it's a group that's worked together, and the language at least enables the possibility of that group sticking together to make recommendations with regard to how the Clean Water Fund is spent. Lastly, on the park side, we've gotten involved in that a little bit recently. I think we're hearing more and more about the importance of parks, trails for public health in the state of Minnesota. There is quite a bit of literature that's coming out emphasizing the need for parks and trails as part of a healthy, not just a lot of wildlife and clean water, but healthy in every way for the citizens, particularly of our metropolitan area. So those are the reasons that we support this bill.
Any questions?
Okay. Thank you very much,
Mr. Chair.
Let's see. John Olson, Minneapolis Park Board. Thank you. Good job. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is John Olson. I'm president of the Minneapolis Park and Recreation Board and also a small business owner in the city of Minneapolis. Today I'd just like to have a few comments about the park system and the importance of parks in this bill. In our regional park system, we have 10 agencies that partner together to form our regional system. We have over 30 million visits per year to that system, which consists of over 200 miles of trails and an additional 300 miles planned. One of the things that people talk about when they talk about trails, it seems folks automatically think about just summer, but Minnesota is a winter state, and we are working to promote people to use those trails in the winter if they're not jogging to cross-country ski. January 31st, I had the opportunity at 8 o'clock in the morning with the temperature hovering around zero to go out and take part in the second largest ski race in the country. It was at Theodore Worth Golf Course, is where it started, in Golden Valley. And we had over 1,600 people that came out and attended that race that were actually in the race, and many more spectators. They ranged anywhere from 10 years old. I think the oldest gentleman I met was near 80 years old. So it was quite impressive to see all those folks out. Those are just some of the ways that people in Minneapolis and in the surrounding communities use their systems. We also use our lakes. Many of us don't travel out of state, but we do fish in the city and in the surrounding communities. So the water quality is very important to us in that aspect also. There's many folks that come in from outside the metro area to use our system. You'll find that folks, when they come to town from outstate, one of the things they like to do is take a look at our park system, whether it's Como, Minneapolis Parks, or some of our surrounding communities. So I think it's a great asset, not only to the immediate metro regional area, but also it's an important part of our visitors. To show that we have such a wonderful state and such wonderful resources. And it is nice to see that we have so many different partners in this bill working together to try and get this passed. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Olson?
Yes.
Representative Wagenius.
Yes, since you're coming from my city and my park board, yes. When this bill was originally introduced, it was an increase in the amount of dollars that would be available, and that's something I think all of us could have supported. But the bill, the way it is written now, has a new troubling aspect because it's dedicating current money. So the way it's written now, the money for this bill will compete with the money that has gone to Minneapolis for LGA. So we can expect that this bill will say, Minneapolis, you're going to have to cut your LGA again. And I just am checking to see if you understand that that is a consequence of this bill.
Yes, Representative, Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, yes, I understand that that is a possibility, and the Minneapolis Park Board will deal with that, if those consequences do occur.
Representative Wagenius.
And given that, you still support the bill?
Yes, I do.
And has the park board voted to support the bill?
Yes, we have. We are supporting this bill. I'm here speaking on behalf of the park board.
And they knew that it was going to compete with LGA?
Yes, Representative.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Olson. Okay, we also have Mr. John Scholl. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
Thank you. My name is John Scholl. I'm the founder of the Game and Fish Coalition, and we strongly support this legislation. I think it's a great compromise and a powerful piece of legislation that will help Minnesota. Let me help you understand a little bit where the game and fish people come from. Right now we get $2.1 million out of the general fund, and we create about $1 billion in tax revenue for this state. It's the only group that's truly not represented in the state in terms of funding. So everybody takes all the money from sales taxes, corporate income taxes, personal income taxes, property taxes. If you think of Cabela's, which is supposed to be the second tourism spot in the state, virtually none of that tax revenue they create goes back into hunting or fishing. So this goes a long ways to improving hunting and fishing. For many of us, you know, the reason I started the Game and Fish Coalition years ago is that I think hunting and fishing, along with a whole lot of other people in the state, is lousy. So the $60 million a year or so that we will get out of this will make a great strive in progress toward improving hunting or fishing. For all of you, whether you live in Big Lake or Brooklyn Park or Minneapolis or Maple Grove or Good Thunder, you've got to understand that 64% of the people in each of your legislative districts, from Champlain to Chaska to Madison, hunt, fish, or watch birds. So I think it's a very important piece of legislation. Secondly, what we're really asking is for the people to be able to make their own decision. If they don't want it, they can just vote against the constitutional amendment. If they don't want to improve hunting or fishing or water quality or parks or trails, it's very easy for people to vote against it. So what we're really asking for is this committee today to pass a piece of legislation that will allow the voter to use their own money for something that I think is pretty important. And I happen to think that some people in this state live to hunt and fish. And there are many union people, for example, blue-collar labor union people that live for only one thing, and that is to hunt or fish. And I think this is a very important piece, whether you're a dentist, whether you're a labor union, I don't care who it is, this is a very important piece of legislation. For those of you in the outstate area, I happen to believe that passage of this legislation will probably be the most important tourism piece of legislation the state will have ever passed. Because if you can dramatically improve hunting and fishing in Minnesota, instead of people saying, I'm going to go to Iowa to go pheasant hunting, or South Dakota to go pheasant hunting, or I'm going to go duck hunting in North Dakota, or I'm going to go fishing in Canada, wouldn't it be cool if people said, why in the heck am I going to leave the state, drive several hours, when I can have better fishing and better hunting here in Minnesota? That's what this piece of legislation is all about, and I think it's a great piece, and I hope that this committee supports it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you, Mr. Scholl. Moving right along, Victor Camp. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and who you represent.
My name is Victor Camp. I'm the director of St. Paul's Como Zoo, and I'd like to thank Chairman Hackbar and the committee for allowing me to testify today. I know I can safely say that the Minnesota Zoo, the Duluth Zoo, and the Como Zoo support the concept of a stable, reliable source of funding to sustain our operation costs at our three zoos, and that we do indeed support the concept of the bill, and we hope that you will be so kind as to consider us part of that and support the passage of this bill.
Welcome. Any questions? Thank you, Mr. Camp. Let's see. Dave Zamuda? Meta? Minnesota Forest Resource Council? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Dave Zamuda, Executive Director of the Minnesota Forest Resources Council, Chairman Hackbarth, committee members. Thank you for the offer and the opportunity for me to testify this morning. Minnesota Forest Resources Council is a 17-member state body that advises the governor, legislature, and federal, state, and county governments on forest policy and practices. The council also administers several programs, most notably for this hearing, Minnesota's voluntary timber harvesting and forest management guidelines. These guidelines help protect water quality, wetlands, fish and wildlife habitat, aesthetics, historic and cultural resources, and other resources that I think are directly relevant to the kinds of issues that are addressed in this bill. I applaud your efforts to provide a dedicated source of funding for fish and wildlife, hunting and fishing, parks, trails, zoos, and water quality. I would note, however, that the word forests does not appear in this bill as currently written. Almost one-third of Minnesota's land base is forest land, 16.3 million acres. Minnesota's forests play a critical role in providing fish and wildlife habitat and protecting water quality. For example, half of Minnesota's big game hunting occurs on lands administered by the DNR Division of Forestry, as does much of the ATV and other recreational use in the state. Fully 95% of the use of the state forest's 2,000 miles of roads is for recreation. Many other examples could be cited in terms of the importance of forests in protecting and conserving water, for example. Please consider making sure that this bill would allow funding for important forestry programs that support the goals you're trying to achieve in this bill. I'll cite three things. One, a state forest legacy account that would provide funds to match the federal forest legacy funds is an important initiative that the Forestry Division and the DNR is interested in. This state forest legacy account would help assure retention of private working forests that provide wildlife habitat, hunting and other recreation opportunities, and clean water. Two, sustainable forestry programs affecting state and county administered lands are important. These programs assure sustainable management and retention of public working forests that protect clean water, provide hunting, birding, other recreational opportunities, wildlife habitat. Ensuring adequate investments in enhancing productivity and sustainable management of these state and county administered forest lands is critical. Three, programs that provide technical forest management assistance to private landowners are also critical. These private landowners own almost 40% of Minnesota's forest lands, farmers and other private forest landowners. In conclusion, I would note that House File 1166, as amended, proposes creation of two councils, a Heritage Enhancement Council and a Clean Water Council. If the Minnesota Forest Resources Council can be helpful in sharing its 9 years of experience as a 100% state-funded Natural Resources Council, the Minnesota Forest Resources Council would be willing to assist, and I would personally be willing to assist, Mr. Chair, if that would be helpful to you. I appreciate the opportunity to testify, and would gladly answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Zamuda? Representative Otto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I don't know, maybe you were saying forests aren't mentioned here, but I'm wondering in the impaired waters bill that was put together by the G16 group, if perhaps they don't talk about forests in there, and I don't recall if they do or not, but it's a question. I don't know if anyone remembers.
I do not have an answer to that question. I'm not certain.
Okay. Anyone else have any questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity.
At this point we have those testifying in opposition. Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and who you represent for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Tom Hesse. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. The Minnesota Chamber does oppose this legislation, and we do so for a couple of reasons. First, we feel that the legislature needs flexibility in its budgeting and should not amend the Constitution with budget-type issues that lock in current revenue streams, current or future revenue streams. We don't take that position lightly. We have also been on record in opposition to things such as the Colorado Taxpayers' Bill of Rights, where we just think it's a better alternative for the legislature to debate what are the priorities of the state and then fund them accordingly. So we've urge you to consider the long-range budgetary issues that this this legislation presents. Second, just we have a general philosophy in opposition to dedicated funds. Again, we think it's a better alternative for the legislature to have all programs in the general fund compete for financing, and having certain programs set aside for special treatment, we just don't think is good policy. And when I look at the work of the Legislative Commission on Planning and Fiscal Policy over the last couple of years, they looked at what the appropriate use of dedicated accounts and funds, and did some research on the subject. One quote from the National Conference of State Legislatures that I think is fairly relevant here, it says, having a large number of separate funds is a relic of 19th century state budgeting, when the practice was to assign a revenue source and a fund to each of the many different activities and to get along without a comprehensive budget. We can budget in the state and in across the country without creating dedicated funds. I look back at the history of the state, and in the late 1940s, I think the legislature was only in control of about 25% of the revenue that came into the state. The rest was either statutorily, constitutionally, or dedicated through federal sources. It really did take away the flexibility of the legislature on how to address specific issues. There was actually at that time there was a constitutional commission established by the legislature that did look into this and did recommend that we should start undoing some of the dedicated funds that the state had at that time. Obviously, we've revisited some of those issues and dedicated some additional funds since the late 1940s. But again, I think it's a cyclical pattern where at times the legislature creates them and then in later times eliminates them. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Hesse. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hesse, if I remember right, wasn't your group represented on the G16?
Mr. Hesse.
Mr. Chair, and Representative McNamara, that's correct.
And the recommendation that came from the G16 on a possible financing would be to put a flat fee on everybody that had a septic or a city water connection. Numbers talked about that would compare to this $60 million would be around $2.50 a month or $30 a year if we were to equate it. The $3 was $75 million. So you think that would be more fair to the citizens of Minnesota that we put a $30 fee on everybody, no matter how poor they are, as opposed to dedicating a part of the sales tax, which would only be able to, you would have to spend money to generate that.
Mr. Jesse.
Mr. Chair and Representative McNamara, I might have to defer to my colleague who was on the G16, but I know they discussed a variety of funding options during that process and felt that the fee structure that was recommended by the group was the most appropriate, or the one that was had the most consensus on its viability. If you look at what the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency said was the impaired waters problem, they identified that 14% of that came from point sources, businesses, and the rest of the 86% came from non-point sources. If you use the sales tax as a funding mechanism, businesses end up paying about 45% of the cost of the general sales tax in the state. So there's a disconnect between the amount of problem that the business community is causing versus the financing structure. I recognize that with this bill, it comes out of the existing sales tax revenue, so that problem, businesses are currently paying that tax. But if it were to go to a situation where the sales tax were increased, that disparity, I think, would need to be addressed.
Okay. Anybody else have any questions for Ms. Hesse? Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Anybody else in the audience that would like to speak for or against the bill? Come on up, Frank. Good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, member of the committee, just slow down when you're 85 years old. I represent the
State your name for the record.
Oh, yeah. Frank Schneider, Jr. Heavy on the Jr. I represent the fishing groups pretty well. A member, life member of about eight of them. Muskies, Inc., Minnesota Sport Fishing Congress. Our closest, I started Sport Fishing Congress way back in 80. We started Muskies, Inc. back in 66 in December. And if I want to say any one thing, I want to say the, and you people know this better than I do, fishing gets hardly a kick in the butt from general taxes. We generate, I'm sure, I don't know the numbers anymore, but around $1 billion worth of sales taxes. Fishing exists on their license fees and what they get back on the excise taxes from the federal government. You wipe those two out, we have no money. And the point I'm trying to make is fisheries can't spend what they haven't got. They can do a lot of things. I've been involved with them now since the 70s, and each year we ask, well, why aren't you doing this program, or why aren't you doing this program? They haven't got the dollars to do it. And to name just one program that didn't take that much, but it's the top program in the country for a fishing group. We started pushing for muskies, and we pushed hard. DNR went along with it. We started real slow. Back in the 60s and previous, and we fished Wisconsin if we wanted quality muskies. But let me tell you something. Wisconsin ain't even a close second to Minnesota when it comes to muskie fishing. We have three very large, we call them tournaments. Actually, they're a social event. One in Minnesota, two in Wisconsin. We'll have from 550 to 700 contestants out there trying to catch a fish. The Wisconsin, if they get a 50-incher, for each 50-incher that they get in their tournament, we'll catch five. We have more people coming to Minnesota to fish muskies for one reason. We have 50-inch fish out there. Now, in order to do this, you've got to have some dollars for the DNR to do this. They haven't been getting it for fishing. There just isn't enough. We spent a whole lot on walleye to get the walleyes back in some kind of shape. And that was a $500,000 project. And it took an act of the legislature to get it. Now, that's walleyes. And I don't want to throw rocks at the fish. It's a nice fish. But your average walleye fisherman, he's a harvester. And he wants to eat fish. Well, between my two sons and I, we average, oh, probably 400 to 450 bass a year, and I won't tell you how many muskies. But if we have one meal in 2 weeks of fish, that's a lot. The point I'm trying to make is they need money in the DNR to have these projects done and done well. We need it. Everybody can't afford, I suppose, to get on the water. I fish 70, 80 days on open water a year. That's a minimum. And I'm probably taking too much of your time. Hey, we're really happy that you're putting that thing out, Representative Parkback, that fight for it. You're going to have all kinds of excuses. Are we taking money from students' dollars? I have four kids. One's an attorney. He found out early in life he didn't want to work for a living. How about that? One is a PhD. He's a professor at one of our universities. The only daughter I had, she has a degree. She's an RN. And my youngest, probably the best auto truck frame man in the state, never went to college. But the point I'm trying to make is we got to get some dollars to have these various programs made. And we're not getting it from the legislature at the present time. If we get it through this bill, they can do things.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This is too bad today. Senator Lissard.
Mr. Chairman, if you get up and turn around, I'm going to show this guy. Just turn around. He doesn't know what I'm about to do. This jacket.
I know now.
He's in the Hall of Fame. I don't want to go over the press, but I want to know. I came in with this car. I was the second one
indicted in the Hall of Fame. I want you to know that.
This guy has been fighting our battles for the fishermen for just years and years and years.
Frank, Frank, I think somebody might have a question for you. Representative Olson, did you have a question?
Mr. Chair, members, Frank, I'm sorry, I don't know your
name. Mr. Snyder.
Snyder. Mr. Snyder, you and another gentleman mentioned this $1 billion of revenue. I don't know where the source for that is, but I'd like to see how you've arrived at this $1 billion of revenue.
The last I knew where it came was United U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. They told us that we did that. They do surveys on that. And it isn't very hard to figure it out. Look what, I hate to tell you what we're paying for muskie birds. Don't tell my wife. But it doesn't take long, and pretty soon you have a hell of a lot of money invested in it. And when you've got two kids that are real active fishermen, like John and Jerry, between the three of us, $10,000, you've got to cover it. We've got a policy to reach higher than that because we can show them. We're stupid. We invest money in another tackle, rods, reels.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Snyder, I'm well aware of what you're talking about. I'm intrigued by the number. It's very high, and you make a very good case for why we need to establish some different priorities here. I have to admit I struggle with the way in which we're doing it. And it's like a very important problem that needs to be solved. We just have to make sure we do it in the right way.
For instance, bass fishermen, I don't know if they'll recognize any here. Lake Minnetonka. Lake Minnetonka turns out in our tournaments over there an average of 4 pounds or higher per fish. If you read the Bassmaster magazine or any of them, these southern tournaments, they'll take 5 fish in a day. That's how many they can keep in most places. And their weight a day is like 15, 12, 13 pounds. That ain't even the 3 pound average. And up here, we assume that's going to be there forever. It's not. It's not if we don't spend some dollars on it. Now, like I said, I like walleye because I like to eat fish once or twice every month. Not any more than that. But the muskie we don't eat. They all go back. And we have a deal in Muskie's name. If you turn in a legal, release a legal fish alive, then if you enter that into the Muskie members only tournament, you have to say what lake it was caught. And then the winners and stuff, there's a big column in our Muskie magazine that tells them where they caught the fish. Well, our people in Minnesota, I'm one of them, we lied. We catch a fish, you get a 48, 49, 50, 52 incher. Where'd you catch it? Metro Lake. And I'm getting telephone calls because I got friends all over the country. We have 45 chapters all over the country. Where the hell is Metro Lake? I don't find it on your state map. No kidding. Now they're smart. They know it doesn't exist, but they know what lakes they are. But you've got a really, really top flight muskie fishing in Lake Mille Lacs, Leech Lake, and then where my cabin is, Lake Vermilion. 50 inches. Won't see them every day, but we see them every week. And we'll tell you how many fish.
Anything else, Representative Olson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Snyder. I very much agree with you and others on the problem. I really struggle with the solution. I'm not convinced it's a
solution.
Yeah, I agree.
People are the ones that got it done.
That's right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Snyder. Always welcome. Thank you very much. Anyone else in the audience for or against the bill that would like to testify? Not seeing anyone else coming forward to testify. Representative Osmond.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to say I believe that some stable funding is really needed for these areas for us to be able to meet our potential here in Minnesota. And we know that we're in hard economic times. This question will be going before the public with that also in mind. And if they are willing to set these areas as priorities, I think that's really a significant help for us long-term in Minnesota. I think that the as we are looking at the economy and as the economy grows, I believe that that's where the first dollars that will be coming in with regard to more than what we're bringing in today, we know where the priority will be. It needs to go for this type of stabilized funding. We know that if we go into further economic distress in future years, it also then speaks loudly with regard to what, where our priorities need to be in maintaining Minnesota's quality for our future generations. And as we know, all the competition is out there, and this past economic budget cycle, you saw how difficult it was for us to continue to provide for many of the items that we're talking about here with regard to wildlife habitat or parks or some of the basics that we want to really maintain, like the quality of our waters. And so I think this is a very important step. It gives the public the opportunity to give the legislature a good sense of direction. And I would like to show also that the unanimity, I believe, that's around this table in supporting these issues and solid support. So, Mr. Chair, I'd request a roll call vote.
Okay. Roll call vote has been requested. Representative Dill.
Thank you, Chairman Hackbarth. And I Representative Osmond, Chairman Osmond, hit almost every point that I was going to bring up, except I would be remiss if I let the forestry issue slip by before we vote. I'm going to vote in favor of this and with the idea that we're going to be able to work together and find a way to forestry represents one of our very largest industries, one of our most important industries, and it dominates the amount of land that we have in the northern quadrant of the state. It has a tremendous impact on our quality of life, not only up in the north, but all over the state in terms of products that come from the land. It has enormous impact in our water quality and goes to, in fact, the impaired nature of some of the lakes up. I think you saw on that map a lot of red dots up in the forested part of this state. And so I'm hoping that Chairman will recognize this and work with us to find some elbow room in here to recognize forestry. And with that, thank you.
Welcome. Representative Wagenius, then Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's not a person in this room that opposes additional money for natural resources. Of course, we all want additional money. The questions are, and we have not addressed them yet because we have not been to the Finance Committee, are we going to be taking this money from education, LGA, health, which is what this bill does? Is that the appropriate way to go? But the other question internal to this bill, and we haven't discussed it yet, is when the Heritage Enhancement Fund gets $64 million, what portion of the need is that? MnDOT can always answer these questions. We haven't even asked the question here. When the Parks and Trails gets $45 million a year, what portion of the need is that? Are we saying forever we're going to say the portion is lower and that is what we're going to dedicate? I know the portion of the Clean Water Fund is way under what it should be. I was sitting here thinking of all the things I forgot to mention that we don't do in this state. Like check and see if the waters we allow to be taken out of our groundwater, if it's sustainable. We do not have a way of knowing when we pump water out of the metropolitan area, which is our drinking water, if it's sustainable, because we haven't even dedicated money for that. So we haven't done the basics. And so I think this bill needs a lot of work. It needs a huge amount of work, and it needs new money. And I'm afraid I have to vote no on it because it's not right.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members and Representative Osmond, I really love working with you when we agree on stuff. And I enjoy working with you when we don't. I very much agree with needing to address this problem. And I know we have huge issues here in the legislature with regard to priorities. when it comes to the Constitution, I really struggle with what we do and how we craft it and what it communicates to the public and whether or not that's communicating what they're really going to be voting on. And I have a question for you that will, could change the way in which I think I'm going to have to vote, despite knowing how difficult the political implications are, because some votes require a lot of dollars to communicate what I believe the truth is. And we all struggle with that, counting the cost. But this is a very important area. My question, Representative Osmond, and maybe the question answer will come from someone else. I'm not, I just think that you probably would be the most likely one to have this answer. As I understand this bill, we are dedicating revenues for certain areas of our budget, and it will guarantee that those specific areas of the budget will have an increase. So we have, in fact, addressed the concern I had about this bill in prior years. It's been made clear to me, and I'm asking for correction if I'm wrong, it's been made clear to me that other areas of the budget could be trimmed to fill in the hole if we're going to hold the line and not increase taxes to increase revenue. And albeit that's fine, because I can clearly see that our priorities have been out of line for a long time. And I think these areas need funding and should have been funded some years ago. The problem I have, not even getting into the issue of the governance structure here created that I think is highly questionable, just in the area of budget. The question I have is, how many years will it take for inflation to consume the increases, and what guarantees do we have that this constitutional dedication will have any effect after that inflation consumes the increases that exist under this bill?
No, Osmond.
Mr. Chair, we can try it. I'd rather have our fiscal analyst actually get you the specifics I think that you're looking for, not just an opinion that I may have off the top of my head. And we will pursue that for you. But as far as the concept goes, if we don't start putting some dollars into these areas, we just keep getting further and further behind. And you know, when we get into really tough times, these areas get hit harder than any other area. Mm-hmm. And so from a belief with regard to prioritization is important in our budgeting process, I think it's really good to have the people have their say on this particular issue. And so, but I can get you the specifics to give you some actual figures to answer your question.
Mr. Chair, Representative Osmond, I believe I can be certain, without having the figures, that at some point in time, inflation will in fact consume these increases. We don't need the numbers to know that. Therefore, this is a constitutional amendment that in no way guarantees an increase over the long haul for this area, and we are still left with needing to be a legislature that can truly prioritize on these issues and bring the increases to bear. So it's really a short-term fix in a long-term document, the Constitution. And with that, I have grave difficulty not even getting into the issue of setting up a governance structure that isn't aligned with the rest of the Constitution. So as much as I find this a difficult issue to deal with and know that it will require a lot of struggle to communicate, I will have to vote no, because there is no guarantee that we have a long-term fix that we're putting in the Constitution. And the fact of the matter is, every one of us here could simply vote to increase this area of the budget and face this issue right now. But we don't.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Osmond.
Mr. Chair, and like I stated, I'll get you figures on it, but I believe, because this is actually attached to the sales tax, as inflation goes up, so will the prices of products. As the price of products goes up, so will the portion of the sales tax. So I think the index that you're looking for is built into the process. But I'd rather have some people that have more expertise in that area explain to me. But I really think that this is indexed to the sales tax. And as that goes up, so will our revenues.
Mr. Chair.
And Representative Olson, you know we're over time.
Yep.
There's one more question from another state representative that we have to get to, and then we have to vote and we have to get out of here. So please make it short.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Osmond. This is why I always like working with you, whether I agree or not. Begging the members' pardon.
I think it's a good question, and I appreciate asking it. And Representative Osment, you've moved me from opposing it to abstain until I get that data.
Thank you, Representative Olson. Representative Wassler.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I will be extremely brief. I plan on supporting this and voting for it. I think it's important to get started, but clearly there's a lot of questions. And because of all the questions that have been raised here, I'm curious on the process. You've mentioned during the testimony that we'll go to government ops and we'll go to finance. Could you give us a snapshot of how you see this bill progressing through the process?
Well, and I think I covered that earlier, that we'll go to government operations next. We're going to look at the councils that are created in the bill, and then it'll go to Representative Osment's finance committee. I don't know if Representative Abrams wants to see it in the tax committee or not. Very possibly he may want to see the bill, and it'll probably go to Ways and Means from there and then to the floor.
Mr. Chair, what is the motion before us now?
Motion before us now is to be recommended to pass and be referred to the Government Operations and Veterans Affairs Policy Committee.
Thank you.
Okay. With that, members, I'd like to, and everybody in the audience, I'd like to thank all the people that came forward and testified for and against the bill. And keep in tune, it's going to be in the Government Operations Committee, and I'm not sure exactly when that's going to be, but we'll probably need you there for support on that. And I would also like to thank Senator Bob Lessard and former State Representative Mark Holston for carrying the water on this issue for many, many years. Getting it to this point, I'd like to thank Representative Osment for him adding the impaired waters portion to this bill. I think we've got a very, very good package. So, with that, the clerk will call the roll.
Hackbarth.
Aye.
Cox.
Aye.
Clark.
No.
Cornish.
Aye.
Dill.
Aye.
Haas. Hoppy.
Aye.
House.
Yes.
Conan.
Aye.
Larson.
Aye.
Lindgren.
Aye.
McNamara.
Yes.
Nelson.
No.
Olson. Otto.
Yes.
Osment.
Yes.
Hennis.
Yes.
Peterson is excused. Swenson.
Yes.
Tingelstad.
Yes.
Wagenius.
No.
Wazlik.
Yes.
Being 17 ayes and 3 nays, the motion prevails. The bill is passed and we refer to Government Operations and Veteran Affairs Policy. Members, we will have a meeting on Thursday, and there are going to be bills before us on Thursday. I will not be the chair. Vice Chair Cox will be in front of you. I have a bill in another committee that day, so meeting adjourned, and we'll see you next week.